Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod as the July international window heats up and probably a little bit of COVID does too in a number of the places around the world preventing a little bit of rugby. Joining me, Ross Carl, is James Parsons in the Auckland studio. Bryn Hall down in Queenstown, living it up. Well, that's an office.
Earned though. He needs a break. He needs to get fresh and ready for harbour. So yeah. You just rest up, mate. You just get yourself ready.
No, I'm excited to be. Great time down here, boys. Yeah. So, it's very nice and cool. And obviously, a shout out to Teresa as well for sorting me out at Millbrook. Great place down here. And so, yeah, Teresa, thank you very much for the beautiful
come
place.
Come on, mate.
First plug.
Come on, mate.
30 seconds in?
You're better than that. You should have just positioned something in the background rather than doing a verbal plug. You should, something in the background.
Oh,
you could have done
it.
You should have rung me. I could have taught you a few things.
That's right. Should we put a Twitter handle somewhere down here and a phone number in case you want your crack at going to Queenstown and Millbrook?
I'd just be well more advanced than that.
Something to learn off you, Jip.
I thought I taught you better.
Just have to look at Jip to see the subtle messaging within the shot.
Subtle.
Who's supporting you? So, onto the point at hand, I suppose, is we had a bit of rugby over the weekend. We had the New Zealand All Blacks 57, Fiji 23, but that scoreline does not indicate anything about that game.
Well, it does for me because they put up a great fight, and by that to beat the All Blacks, it's a challenge, and that's why there's so many teams they play and there's records where they haven't won or, there's only a few victories. And a couple of instances I'll give you is why they had the ability to run away with it towards the end, but also the ability of the opposition giving them an in. And I suppose, it's our mate, our old mate, and I've apologised for bringing him up, but Benny Volavola had couple of opportunities from the back, and he didn't have a lot of support around him, and he tried to counter-attack. And outside of that, in the first half, they played such a disciplined brand of footy on both attack and defence. And, it was physical, disciplined, a little bit of, Northern Hemisphere-style footy. And those two moments allowed the All Blacks two entries into the 22, and they got two tries out of it. Had that not happened, because their defence outside of the 22 was, pretty resilient, had that not happened and hadn't they let those entries in, they could have been going into the break ahead, realistically, because they were so dominant at the breakdown physically. But then in the second half, the way the All Blacks upped the tempo, you would have noticed a lot more quick throw-ins. Sevu Reece really came into his own, and they also went back to the big men. And, in that first half, they probably ran a little bit. Sometimes they ran from deep and got turned over in those breakdown areas. But it was a maul off almost in the second half. The boys rolled their sleeves up, and Colsey obviously was the benefactor. But it's actually a lot harder than you think at the back there. You've got halfbacks like him trying to rip it off you.
Yeah.
And he holds it and gets the try. But
it's all right, 'cause
that's what I'm saying.
Going all the way.
Absolutely not. It's a lot harder than you think. But that's what I'm saying. Like it was actually. I think it was a fair reflection of the game. And I know it was a hard test match, and I know it was physical. But I felt like the All Blacks ran away with it, and deservedly so, with the way they changed their tactics and went about their business, but also the way Fiji had the two instances in the first half, but also the discipline, the dominance they had in the breakdown the first half wasn't the same in the second half. And a number of times the refs said, you're not supporting your own body weight and you're not trying to lift the ball anymore. And then they got penalised, eventually leading to a yellow card. And it's those are the opportunities you just can't give teams like the All Blacks at international level if you want to be close or have the ability to win.
And those conversion stats for the All Blacks on attack were pretty amazing when they got into the 22.
Yeah, well, nine tries.
Yeah.
It's pretty effective.
Yeah, I think yeah, probably in that second half, we saw it a lot more. You look at Dane Colson around, scoring those four tries around, going back to their set piece. Because I think probably in the build-up of the game, Justin Marshall highlighted it, you know, with the parity of set piece. And, you know, probably the All Blacks in the back end of that second half went to their line-out. You know, they had 19 line-outs, 19 wins at 100%, and really took their legs out of them in that second half. And, but in saying that, like, it was 31-23 in the 60th minute. And Davey Harvilli obviously gets sent off, and you know, the game was right on. But I think they went back to their lineup moves and taking their legs out that way through. Obviously, what you talked about, the discipline around the breakdown, and yes, they did get a lot of steals. Like Bottier, their captain, Dyer, and even their 13 as well had some really good turnovers in the game. But I think probably the learning that Fiji can take going into the next game is, yep, they can obviously. Keep going at that breakdown and putting the All Blacks under pressure and try to get their turnovers and slow down their ball, which they did pretty well. But I think just the ability to be able to, instead of just latching on and trying to gain the penalty, if they have that lifting up motion like they did a lot of times and not giving the opportunities for the All Blacks to get into their half where they can start go to the line out more and be able to build pressure and score points that way, then it's going to be another great game, because I think the breakdown was massive. They won that breakdown battle. You know, Fozzie talked about it in that post-match around their breakdown and not winning races, and Fiji beat them to the punch in that department. So no doubt for the next game that we're probably going to see a lot more improvement in that with the speed of tempo and the violence and probably the breakdown of winning races and beating those jacklers of Fiji who beat them to the punch in the game. So but overall, I thought it was a tremendous test match, considering that probably going into that game after such a big performance scoreboard-wise against Tonga. You know, Fiji gave them a lot to think about, and they're probably going to go into this week doing a lot of preview around a lot of things they're going to have to change as well.
Why didn't they win the race of the breakdown? What was lacking in the All Blacks there?
Oh, there's a number of factors. Like there's ball carry, there's tackle styles. So if you don't win the collision first up in the carry, that's one part, and I think a lot of the time we saw that the actual tackler was throwing our ball carrier to the ground, and that gives you the ability to paint the picture to the ref you've released, and it gives you the ability to just, it's almost like a quick release.
Yeah,
it's still a release and it was fair, but it's that quick release, and then they're already in that strong position with good width of their feet, and they're on that ball straight away. And you know, because the cleaners are looking for a tip, or you know, there's structure, you're not going to win that race. So there's a little bit of an onus on probably the ball carry. And Fozzie mentioned that in the same after-match speech, that he's like, yep, the cleaners have got to be faster and win those races, but you're not going to win a race when the tackler is the jackler, if that makes sense. Because a lot of the time, you know, you'll go low, and that's the tackler, he rolls out, and then the jackler comes in, and that's the race we're talking about. You were trying to win that race with that guy, but a lot of the instances, it was the tackler was the jackler, and that's the race. It's not that you can't win it, but, you know, because they were such physical presence. You know, I was looking at after the game, a couple of the Fijian players were standing next to Shannon Frizzell and Sam Whitelock, and they looked small. The Fijian forward pack is huge. They are massive blokes, you know, like they are not little men. So you imagine trying to move them if they're in a good body position straight away and on that ball, you know, and they clearly came with a determined mindset. So I think that's more why they were struggling at the breakdown, and that's probably what they'll focus on more, is that ball carry and making sure that we're winning that initial collision. And it might be as simple as, you know, not adjusting everything, but it could be a bit of latch work, you know, going four legs versus two, so that you get a bit of impetus through there, or maybe looking to tip early. I don't know.
I'll tell you one thing that I was impressed as well, Chip, is the Fijian line-out options as well. You know, the All Blacks pride themselves probably defensively around stunting people, line-out mauls and even special plays, but, you know, that probably had, I don't know if you saw, but the two tries that they did have the line-out drive, they actually changed the point of attack around going the back of the line-out, like a shift drive, going to the back of the All Blacks more. Do you think that was a plan that they would have saw, and probably obviously Jason Ryan probably would have seen, knowing a lot of those All Black men and those players, but did you see the obviously Fijian tried to stay away from that first shunt and then shearing off towards the back and trying to go through that way?
Yeah, oh, I think Jason Ryan has done his coaching credentials a massive We already had a lot of respect for him, but I think, you know, he's probably always had great cattle. And not saying the Fijian players aren't of the Crusader cattle, but the Crusader cattle's pretty amazing. And now he's, you know, had limited preparation time with some quality cattle from overseas that have had to come out of MIQ, and to put the performance they did together was pretty amazing. And that comes down to good systems, good coaching and good preparation and good professional players. And that's exactly, I agree with you. Some of those special moves around the front are very, you know, out of that Crusader mould, but also the Maul utilising the defensive pressure to share around the back is always a better option than, you know, sometimes you see teams try to share around the front, and because you've got the sideline there, it's almost fool's gold. Teams want you to think you're going to share around there, and then you actually end up on top of yourself out. So using that around the back towards the post was smart. And then the timing of the Fijian player, I can't remember who scored the try, but he popped off just at the right time to win that collision to score, because it was just fading away, the Maul, and he pops off and he scores at just the perfect time. So it was a well-orchestrated drive, and definitely an area I felt like, you know, both sides attacking Mauls were dominant, but both sides defensively will be looking at their Maul defence this week, because they both teams got dominated in that area.
What were they doing wrong?
Look, there's so many variables, and a lot of it's timing, but it's a lot of it's also what I was saying about the attacking team using the weight of the defensive team to. So if you put all this pressure here, you almost use that to shear you around. And because you're all in that mould, they can't get back round quick enough to catch up. And it was the same for the All Blacks. They utilised that weight and moved with it. So it's almost making sure that you form all the bodies in the right angle and keep that pressure going forward, not in just one spot. And they'll have a system, and it just clearly didn't work, and they will adjust because they've got that footage. Sometimes when you don't have footage on each other and things like that, it'll be interesting going into this week. I feel like it'll be a bit tighter, and almost I feel like maybe the All Blacks game plan might flip on its head a little bit, and they'll start with quite a direct focus.
Why wouldn't they have started that way in the first place, Bryn? Why would you not start looking for forward dominance?
Oh, it's not that they wouldn't have started looking for forward dominance, but it was more like there was a lot of kicking, and it was more that counter. I don't know how you saw it, Bryn, but it was that it was we were countering from the
I think
back.
Yeah, because I think the fact that they struggled a little bit at line-out, Ben Volleval and their kicking plan was probably to kick long and in, just to take away, you know, even if they were inside their 22 or just outside, they didn't want to go to too many contestables. Probably early on, actually, got Benny Vola Vola in the back and wanting to kick long, so they didn't go to set piece, because obviously the All Blacks are so dominant then. And the stats showed that they were 19 out of 19. So they tried to do that, but then I think a couple of aerial kicks that were a little bit long in field, and not like you look at Sevi Reese's one, it was a long kick, and then the ability to give the All Blacks an opportunity, even though most of the time they were actually well connected. But if you're going to give the All Blacks opportunities to play for counter off that kind of kick phase, you better make sure that your defense is set, because you know they're going to light you up. But then I think probably early on, Benny Volavola's, you know, his decision-making around when to run put Fiji under a little bit of pressure. So I think if they can just get that balance right of kicking long, getting the defensive line set up, very similar to what the Northern Hemisphere players do, they kick long and they back their defense. And then if they have that dominance again at the breakdown without being able to have turnovers and release pressure through that way, and make the adjustments of not giving them penalties inside their own half, because if they do, and there's probably going to be scenes on the weekend where they're going to have line-out drives, and they're going to be getting, you know, Dane Coles or whoever's at hooker will probably have a field day scoring tries. So I'd probably say discipline's going to be a massive one with them around their kick chase if they do decide to go long like they did on the weekend. And then also the turnover ability to be able to pick the ball up and show that they're going up and not giving penalties, so the All Blacks can then go into their line-out drive, which was dominant on the weekend.
You just mentioned their kick chase, and that's probably where they were really strong. And that's what I was probably alluding to is, we counted, but the reason why we counted is because we had our back three and our two middies worked really hard to get back on their kicks. And that gives you five players in the backfield, which is quite a lot of, you know, players in the backfield to manipulate and counterattack with. And, you know, when you see that as an attacking team, you're like, oh, okay, we can have a crack here, rather than maybe going for a contestable or look for kick strategy. But the Fijian defence was up to it. And on those occasions, they got the tackles right and got those turnovers around that defensive pressure. So sometimes you've actually just got to credit the D for fronting up. In a positive attacking situation, they didn't quite nail it against the, you know, a defensive team that were up to task.
They've obviously got a lot of Northern Hemisphere experience, those Fijian players throughout France and other places. They've got a coach in Vern Cotter who knows Northern Hemisphere rugby really, really well. Did you see a large amount of influence to go along with the Fijian flair that you normally see?
Yeah, I think massively. Like, I think I wrote down at one stage, yeah, like, Fiji played disciplined, risk-free physical rugby. Like, it was so risk-free. Apart from those two moments I spoke about in the counter-attack, it was just so... I don't think they made an error, defensively or in attack, except for those two counter-attack moments. And then those two moments made them make two defensive errors, which led to tries as well. So apart from that, and it was so, I would say, that Northern Hemisphere-based kick strategy, set piece, and real physical breakdown presence.
That sounds like a recipe for consistent success to me, Brent.
Yeah, I think it is. And, we talked about they've got a pretty high-quality coaching staff with Vern Cotter, Gibson, and Jason Ryan there. And so, you know, the best thing about that as well is that, you know, we know the amount of flair and how much talent that the Fijians have. And when they do have the ball in hand, you know, there was instances on the weekend, there were offloads, and you're going to get that. It's probably just been always around set piece and really dominating that. Even though I thought their lineout operated really well, they only lost two lineouts, but, you know, especially against an all-black pack that's got a lot of experience around defensive pressure at lineouts, you know, they were pretty good around that. And their scrum as well, they only lost one. So I think getting that set piece is massive for them, and if they can keep having the improvements that they will have, they've got great coaching staff that'll be able to do that. And I think it's just time in the saddle with that group and being able to play more test matches and being able to figure each other out. But the quality of coaching that they do have, and the more time that they do stay together, you look at the physicality. Jip talked about it. I remember seeing those pictures around them standing next to Sam Whitelock, and they're, you know, they're big men standing right next to them, but, you know, they looked physical. They looked big and physical. And so having that marry up of having their flair, but then using their brute force and their physicality that they have just due to their genetics and have been able to how big they are. And if they can marry that up with their set piece and their discipline, it's going to be a hell of a test match, the second test match, if they can afford to make the adjustments that they did on the weekend.
I just think they've got to get the balance right. Like, don't lose their natural instinct to play. And by that I mean, you know, if you look at statistically, All Blacks had 21 clean breaks to Fiji's 6, and the stats were pretty much 50-50 possession-wise. So somehow in their attack strategy, they've got to bring out their offload game, their Fijian, you know, I suppose, style within that, because there are a couple of times where they made line breaks, inside ball, blindside winger comes through, and then they went for a pick and go. And I think they had Nemanja Nadolo was just screaming for it. And it's those sorts of things where you've just got to think, ball up, let's play.
Yeah.
So there's your conservative, disciplined, physical presence, take it to them. But then there's your natural instinct, you know, play with expansive mindset as well. Because you have to be able to create opportunities in attack to score enough points. Because you know the All Blacks are going to score quite a few. They will break you down and they'll find a way. So it wasn't quite working as fast as they want, so they went to their forwards. So they can do it in multiple ways, and they have the ability, you know, they've got plan A, but then they've got plan B, C and D. I think that's probably what I think Fiji need to look at.
Yeah. And just on that, Joe, I think don't underestimate them playing with the dry ball as well. Yeah. It's a lot easier to be able to open up around their attack and be able to play a lot more. I think they're playing at Hamilton the next test match, and there's actually forecasted rain for that day. So I think even more so around their set piece and getting that right, it's going to be
Suit, I think if it's suit the Northern Hemisphere style, to be fair.
You know, so
well, and even in Fiji, sometimes it helps down with rain.
And look, I'm not worried about that. Like, I'm just saying that don't lose their natural instinct to. to have a crack.
So let's say that...
Even though I'm contradicting myself with my Benny Vola Vola comments, but you've just got to have a crack when it's on and you've got support around you.
So how hard is it to have plan A plus B work together when you only play together every now and then, Bryn?
Well, I think it depends how they have their preppers around it, and I think it's having an understanding throughout the week, you know, possibly, you know, what that weather's going to be like. So no doubt, especially with Jason Ryan in camp, they'll be doing the what-if kind of moments around their game plan. So, you know, they were fortunate enough on the weekend that it was dry and weather wasn't an option, so they could afford to play a little bit more and implement their game plan that they had, knowing that the conditions were going to be exactly how they were going to be. But I think it's just having an ability to prepare for what that looks like. So it could be sunny on the weekend, it could be rainy on the weekend. So I think having the conversations, whether you're a line-out leader, forward, an inside back, your drivers, and connecting, because I think if you do have an understanding around what conditions are going to be like, what that plan will be like, whether that's running, you might go into a little bit of a Northern Hemisphere style where it's a lot more kicking-based and set-piece orientated. And so I think first and foremost, it's having a plan in place at the start of the week, and then your drivers and people that need to know and have a good understanding around game plan and game management, those people, we need to have the conversations throughout the week, talk about it, and then once you are in game, you're prepared, and then you've at least got the ability to say, okay, this isn't working, it's a little bit too wet, we thought we could play a little bit, but it's obviously a lot of rain, so probably playing expansive style might not suit us. Let's go to a contestable game, let's kick long, let's go back to being able to get our defence right and being able to put pressure on in other ways like that.
I just want to give a compliment to the Fijian team. During the anthems, we saw tears rolling down their cheeks. We saw passion for their country with so much going on with COVID there. There obviously was a high set of emotion. And to do that and then play in such a composed way immediately after in the first half is quite an incredible thing to do.
I think it empowers them.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of emotions. You know, you could use Carl Tuinukaafi the same. You know, when he debuted, he shed some tears. There's been a number of players that shed tears, and sometimes there's players that don't shed tears that feel the exact same emotion, and it almost gives you the extra oomph, to be honest.
Yeah.
If you can control it, and you can still keep on task.
Yeah.
And they certainly did that. So I don't think those sorts of emotions are ever a detractor if you have the ability to control it.
Yeah. But and also I think we've seen quite a lot of it. We've seen interviews of Sky and build-up to games. We've seen quite a lot of it. Players now are so in touch with their emotions. They're so willing to be open and engaging about who they are and what they are. It's been an incredible maturation of rugby, Brent.
Yeah, I think it just grows, and it's great for viewers. I think, you know, I guess rugby players sometimes are just seen as this kind of stereotypical way and perceived in a light. Whereas I think, you know, the All Access, you know, you look at the ones with Sky did with Richie, Tom Robinson, and showing the other side. It's really great for us as players, and I guess for people as well, to have a better connection and understanding for what rugby players feel like. And so it's a great forum for us as players, and it's great to see that that's been more accepting now. And I think for players that aren't in the environment, or people that aren't have a good understanding of like what it is to be a rugby player, I think getting the education of us what it feels like and being able to express those feelings openly, it's been great, and long may it continue.
I think players are realizing and understanding that vulnerability is a really strong form of leadership. For not only, you know, in teams, but also for society, and I think that's why there's a more openness to be real and show their true selves, and I think it's a good progression for players as individuals, and the sport, but also for I suppose, you know, young players looking up to them as well.
As a movement, how did this begin? Like, how has this evolved to be like this?
I don't know, mate. I think it's society as a whole. I don't think it's just the sport.
Yep.
I think society as a whole is being more open to being vulnerable and expressing ourselves, and rugby's just a sport that's moving with it.
That's cool. It's very, very cool to see. Yeah, let's get on to the All Blacks. Obviously, we've seen two very different teams the first 2 weeks of tests. What do we see this week? Do we have a big change up again?
Oh, look, I'm really excited for potentially knuckling down on a 23. I think that the rugby championship is quite crucial. And I always find that when you have a 23 and guys are only coming in if there's niggles or injuries, you can really get a good rhythm. And I suppose it goes back to that word cohesion that we've sort of spoken about a lot this year. But I think if they can knuckle down on that 23 and, you know, you have your clear role in your team and you have a clear understanding, you almost leave this series and know where your place is and what you've got to work on to, one, get back in, but also it means you can build those combinations. And I think that this test match for me is probably about that for this coaching group and leaders to really knuckle down and start zoning in on finishing off this July series, Steinlager series, really well, but also, you know, making sure that they're ready to go in with a clear plan as a 23 or, you know, a 36-man squad, but of who they're going to go in with first off in that rugby championship, because that's, I'm excited for that championship.
So this is a form team this week, a best team? What do we call this thing this week?
Oh, I reckon we talked about people getting opportunities in probably the first couple of test matches and, you know, against Tonga and Fiji. But I think, you know, for the fact how well Fiji played, yeah, I think it's going to be, coming back to your point, Jip, around rugby championship isn't too far away. And so I think they're actually going to go back to a pretty settled lineup around a clear plan around that 23 moving into the rugby championship. And I think starting well in that competition will be really, really important. And so the amount of probably less, that's only been the third test of the year, I think we're probably going to see a pretty experienced side in the 23 that will probably play that first test match. And so, yeah, that's probably how I'm seeing it. It's going to be a pretty familiar names that will probably be in that 23.
Best fit and available team, because I know that, you know, if they're watching this, they're going to be saying, no, we just focus on this week. And I believe that will be the case. But I think the coaching group will be, you know, front-loading their prep for the rugby championship and getting a clear understanding of where they want to go. But as players, they'll be focused on this week and this week only. But I feel it will be a selection of the best fit and available, because there are some players injured that will come back into contention.
So let's talk about some of those positions then. What positions do you think are going to be the ones which are most contestable for this weekend, and who do you think they'll go with?
Seven.
Yep.
You know, is Dalton back in the mix? Because Ethan, you know, has gone pretty well. Dalton's been outstanding when he played. Is he fit and available? Artie hasn't had a run. By all accounts, he's ready to go. And he's got runs on the board. Mm. So his current form doesn't really matter, because we know that when he puts on a black jersey, he's ready to go. So that's a position that's up for discussion. Where else? Lock, you know, Brody gets through 80. Paddy's there. I don't think he did any harm for himself. You know, the skip's there. So there's one position for Scott Barrett, Paddy and Brody. Then there's obviously the bench position. So
that's a difficult one.
That's a difficult one. We still haven't probably, you know, have we seen enough of Tupou Vai, you know, as well? So he's around. Does he get an opportunity potentially off the bench, or he might even start? I don't know. So, I mean, there's a lot to discuss there. Where they go at six and eight, you know, I think both Luke Jacobs and Hoskins did well. Shannon Frizzell and Akira. I mean, you could go through the whole, you know, 10's obviously another discussion.
Well.
Fullback's another discussion.
Think,
you know, Sever Reese was outstanding on the weekend. You know, wingers, honestly, it is so hard to pick a 23. Mm. It genuinely is.
Yeah, I definitely reckon you touched on the forwards. I think probably those winger spot, the winger spots, you look at probably Will Jordan, who played really, really well at 14, and then Sebu as well played well, and then you've obviously got
Sebu
George Bridge, who's played two. Yeah, he's had two test matches at 11. Do they change and possibly put Sebu at 11 and Will at 14, just through with their performance, and George having two test matches as well. So, and then you've got Jordy and Damo at the back as well. And then we've talked about Richie and Bowden, who's going to be 10 for that test match. But I think the wingers will probably be an interesting selection, seeing how they're going to go, whether they put someone out of position who aren't traditionally left wingers. You look at, there's only one really in the squad, with George being the only left winger who plays that traditionally. So do they want to change it up and put Sevu or Will in those positions? So yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they keep George there or they change it up a little bit in those winger positions.
That seems like an opportunity. You know, if you only have one guy there who's a specialist, now is the time to give someone else some time there, surely.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think maybe last week was, I don't know. As I say, I think they'll go for the best fit and available of their opinion for this week.
That's the thing about this at the moment. It gets anything. It could be anything at all.
I mean, they could put out multiple 23s, and I think we'd all be happy.
Yeah. But yeah. Is that...
like, look, U7, for example, yeah. if Ethan's there, Dalton's there, Artie's there, I'm not unhappy.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same at 6, it's the same at 8 for me. You know, it's lock. I mean, yeah. I think there's probably test teams all around the world that could take a couple of them.
Yeah, but we continue to come back to the Darwinism, the cohesion.
Cohesion!
The cohesion. Like, that's... options is one thing.
Mm.
Making them work together is quite another.
Yeah.
And it's, at this point in time, almost a little worrying for me that we, you know, we don't really know.
Oh, I'm sure they know.
Yeah.
We don't.
Yeah.
We're just sitting here to debate it, but I'm sure the coaches... I believe the coaches will have a clear plan of where they're going with it.
Yeah. So, experienced blokes required now or not?
Oh,
experience always matters. But I think the fact that there is a form of they're all great players. You know, like we just talked about, there's so much hotly contested for any position in the squad. So with whatever team they really do go, whether it be experienced or not. Our opinion is probably that they might go for the tried and true in certain positions and available and fit. But I think experience aside, yep, it's great to have it. But I think if you're in an All Black team and you're selected, it doesn't really matter if you have the experience or not. It's such a hotly contested team. And it doesn't matter who you are in that team. When like you said, whoever's selected, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that's a good selection. You're not going to have any worries about it. Just with the class and how much talent and kind of, yeah, just great players that they are in general.
Experience is going to matter at some point when there's a tight test. It might not be this week, but it's going to matter at some point. So it's when you need to figure out what your top 23 is and how they go about that and start building that cohesion. Yeah, that's the decision here. Because if you use the Aussie-French game, and I know we're about to start talking on that, but that's a lack of experience that the French didn't win that game.
Yeah.
So that's what inexperience looks like, is that they just didn't kick that ball out. So that's, and I'm not saying that's...
It's kind of astounding, because you played a lot of footy before you played test footy.
Well, like, there's been many games, like, we've played a lot of games, and pressure does funny things. Like, you think you're doing the right thing, and you're just like, oh, I don't want it to get charged down. You know, that's what they would have been thinking, the French. Like, oh, I don't want this charged down. Feel the pressure. Here, bang, bang. And but then someone's thinking, oh, well, they're definitely going to kick it, so not expecting a pass. Do you know what I mean? And it just happens like that.
Yeah.
And boom. And then McDermott's got it. Struth, we're on D now.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just happens.
Just like that.
Because I'm thinking one thing, you're thinking the other.
Yeah.
And it's, the pressure just, it does funny things. Yeah. To the not the inner experience, it can happen to anyone with experience or not, but people with more experience do seem to have a more calming nature when the pressure is on, because, you know, mentally their brain's been there and done it so many times, they can almost, it's not autopilot, but
process.
They're just in the zone more comfortably.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to talk to you about this. Did you see it in the NRL on the weekend? The player who ran the wrong way down the field.
Yeah, Sam Walker.
Sam Walker. Classic way of finishing a game.
Yeah. I like what Billy Slater said when he came out. He goes, do it your way. You know, because a lot of people came out quite hard on Sam Walker around that.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, God forbid we play this game differently and find a better way to you know, seal a game.
Yeah.
And he goes, Sam Walker, keep doing it your way. And because a lot of people were into him, a lot of greats of NRL, and then a lot of people have come out and supported, and I thought it was, you know, it was good.
Yeah.
You know, like, because there is not one way to win a game or close out a game. Because what if he'd gone up and, you know, got stripped and they'd gone the distance? Who knows?
Well, the risk is in the contact, right?
Yeah.
So avoid it. Yeah. It seems simple.
Or the risk is in taking a field goal.
As simple as that.
And missing it. Missing the field goal, and then they get another set of six to go,
yeah, you know,
draw it. Or so technically, it was a smart,
yeah, so good to watch
decision, even though the poor kid got ridiculed, yeah, at 18 years of age.
Yeah, and then there was a piece of vision that came out of Tony Edo doing it for the Adelaide Rams back in like 1998 in Super League. And I was like, well, you know, you can say the good old days, but yeah, that's the good old days. And that's smart. A great player.
That's smart. Like, well, Sam Walker is going to be great. He's great already, but he will be just one of the greats.
Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. I don't know how you introduce that into rugby. I don't think it's possible. But no. I want to see more weird stuff. Just weird stuff like that. It's bloody cool. Okay, so the Aussie-France game. Getting back to that from the NRL chat, that's not your fault, I brought it up.
Yeah.
What did you make of the way that French outfit went outside of the fact that they blew it at the end, Bryn?
Oh, I thought they started off really, really well. You know, like, Villiers, the winger? Is it Villiers, that's how you say it? Villiers?
Well, look, I'm not a French specialist, but run with that. We can run with that.
I thought that they started really, really well. I think they brought that Northern Hemisphere kind of exit zone, been really great around decision-making around the exits early on, and therefore put Australia under pressure. They were probably in that first 30, 35 minutes before the a try, they had a lot of mistakes. And so the French kind of in that first passage of play, first 30, 35 minutes, were actually pretty good around taking the opportunities when they had them. And, you know, I thought their second five, Jonathan Danty, was massive. And the second five centre pairing for that, with Vincent as well, were outstanding around putting a lot of defensive pressure on the Australians through with them coming up collectively, especially off kicks as well. A lot of times they actually ended up shutting off the counter-attack from Australia due to their pressure and bringing up the line speed and connecting with their forwards. But then I actually thought probably the winning of the game was actually probably two players for Australia. Tate McDermott, who you talked about before, Drip, his spark and his enthusiasm, especially probably that last try. Whose try was it? Hooper's try, when he actually ended up taxing a little bit through some good go-forward ball that they finally did get through in the later stages of the game. Gave it to Harry Wilson, popped up, but then from that phase of play there, Hooper ends up scoring a try through going, putting it off a pick and go. But and I thought Taniela's Tupou's injection as well at scrum time. He bought here three penalties in scrums and really just kind of got that dominance back in for Australia. So I actually thought the winning of the game really for Australia was their impacts of their bench coming on and really making a massive influence in that game, because look, I thought France... I'm pretty gutted for them, actually. Watching that test match when they... I think it was actually Danty they got the turnover to ice the game and win the game. And then to see that happen, those stages where you talked around Chip, the inexperience and that kind of happening, I felt gutted for them because I actually thought they were the better team. But, you know, full credit to Australia. Dave Rennie actually talked about a bit of resilience and they didn't play at their best, but they got the job done through added pressure and the back end of the game not kicking it out, and they ended up winning the game through a lawless year goal in the end. But yeah, a great test match considering how many players were out for France, and it brings on a hell of a spectacle for test two coming up shortly.
What did you make of them?
Oh, look, it was a great test match to watch. Really enjoyed it just because of the close nature of it, and I suppose the French getting out to a lead, and you knew it was actually going to be quite hard for them to claw it back at one stage. And what did I make of it? I suppose the Aussies gave the French all their opportunities. You know, Tom Banks misses a penalty touch. Gordon rolling the ball forward when he's trying to buy his time at the back of a ruck, and that goes for a knock-on. Forward pass to Paisami when he cuts that line for the try that was disallowed. Lolosio drops the high ball in the backfield. From that scrum, they score their second try. So everything... Every opportunity that the French got to attack and score from was on the back of an Aussie error. And then, you know, I think it was a turnover scrum that led them to that first try. And the biggest thing I think would have annoyed them about the first try is the French offload game. So, you know, we know Dave Rennie's big about wanting to win collisions defensively, win those collisions. You know, you're not winning collisions if you're allowing offloads. And I suppose that was the biggest thing, is they allowed offloads, and the Aussies tackled at 77%. So I think those will be the big areas Dave Rennie focuses on, is that accuracy and that turnover rate and the defensive presence and making sure that you're winning those collisions that, you know, that you're dominant. Because 91% the French tackled at, and they only had 34% possession. So they're on D a lot, and they were accurate, you know. And so for me, it means the Aussies just didn't take the opportunities, because they had their opportunities. They broke them a lot.
Yeah.
I think there was a crossfield kick that didn't just go to hand. There was a grubber in behind that, you know, just didn't bounce up. It was almost, it just wasn't their night on attack. So I'm not too concerned about their attack. I think that'll come with a few games and a few strings, you know, to their bow. But defensively, that presence and the turnover rate, letting teams in, that sort of stuff, I feel Rennie, those are the sort of, you know, sort of effort areas that he won't like. Is it doom and gloom because they won? No, but I think it will be a hard week for them at training.
Yeah, and you kind of want that at this point in time?
I think you do, but you do want to, you'll want to see a big shift. Like, probably without Hooper there, I don't know if they win that game. Like, he was massive. Mm. Like, his turnover straight after half time, like, his work rate to make the tackles, he's a menace at the breakdown, he's great on attack, he scores that try through a nifty, like, I don't know, reverse pick and go. He's definitely the right man to be leading the ship. But there was a lot of guys still, you know, we spoke about an experience from the French side, still new in their, you know, test career, that'll learn a lot from that.
Yeah, we got test footy on a Tuesday night.
Oh, how good.
What is this?
Yeah,
what
come
is,
on.
It was great on a Wednesday. It's even better on a Tuesday.
Earlier.
Yeah.
The week's barely started and you already got test footy.
And then we got Origin on Wednesday, so they're smart, just giving it a day before.
Yeah, you don't want to compete with that. But, if you're watching on Sky, stay tuned, because you've got some test footy coming up real soon, Tuesday night, and it just makes the week worthwhile.
Oh, it does.
And then you look at the weekend. I looked at my MySky record, and the international rugby is just stacking up, and I could see my percentage go from like 60% hard drive down to like 20% hard drive by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, I've actually got to watch them and get rid of them to keep up with it. It's just ridiculous.
Then you don't sleep if you watch all of that.
No, you don't. You don't.
It's an incredible amount of footy. And there's also games not going on. You know, over in South Africa, you know, what is going on with this series? We've got Sia Khaleesi, Mapimpi, a whole bunch of the Springboks players now with COVID. The coach, Nienaba, is in isolation, and you've got Russie stepping in. I don't know how that works with Russie. Is he still part of the coaching team? I'm not 100% sure.
I'm sure he is
What that is exactly. Gregor Townsend is isolating and coaching the Lions via Zoom. This is a weird series.
Yeah. Frustrating because, man, both sides look really good. And I'm not saying it's not going to go ahead. I hope it does. But disappointing that potentially maybe they didn't foresee this and just have it in the UK.
Well, they did foresee it, and then they chose not to, and then they actually, now we need the money or whatever they say.
Because, I mean, the Lions have still got a clear game plan, like watching the second game against the Sharks, although I think they were actually under the pump until the red card. But, I mean, they still look a sharp outfit, and they've got a real good squad depth and a clear plan of the way they want to play. And the Springboks from the one outing we saw, there's definitely enough there to be excited for this three-match test series. It's just can they get a team on the field?
And when do you make a call on it? When do you call on whether a test goes ahead or not? You can't do it the week of
how long to the first test?
I think it's the 27th, the first test.
Yeah, I think they've got one more against the Stormers. South Africa A, and then it's the first test.
Yeah.
It's not far away, and those the Stormers and South Africa A tests are pretty much within a week, like in the same week.
So it's there's a lot going
I think, on. I think fortunately enough, probably for the Lions, is that they've actually been able to play test matches. They've played test matches, even though they're playing against Super Rugby franchises now, they're actually playing games and being able to iron out a few things that they want to bring into that series. And you look at probably for South Africa, you know, they've had that one game against Georgia that they probably weren't very impressive, and due to obviously not playing for a couple of years and playing test match footy. And so, if anything, you know, they need those warm-up games as well to be able to try rectify a few things going to that test match. So, you know, if it does end up going and happening, I think that first test match, I'd probably say the Lions would have to be favourites going to that test match, I reckon, even though they're in South Africa. But it's just preparation-wise, it's pretty terrible for the Boks, but no doubt they'll have a plan in place, and they'll be touring as doing the best that they can. But I think just the fact that the Lions have had actually been able to play a bit of footy together and been able to have guys playing consistently, it probably just puts them in the driver's seat for the moment.
There's a couple of areas, though, that they'll want to sort out. And I say it again for the third game in a row. They've got to get their Boks kicking accuracy right. Like a couple of times their Boks kicking went into the midfield and caught with no pressure, not contestable, around the attacking 40-metre. Like, if Cheslin Colby's catching that, you're under serious heat, you know, and you just can't put yourself under that sort of heat. So I still think that's a concern. Like, it's a clear tactic, but if you're not accurate and you're not landing that Boks kick in the 5-metre channel, at worst in that 15-metre channel, you can't get that defence up, like you spoke about the French midfielders shutting it off so you can't get that attack. You're putting yourself under the pump. The other area is they're clearly wanting to play with the ball, the forwards. They're wanting to tip. They're wanting to give that release out the back. But it's about reading the defence. And a lot of the time, the Sharks, and the second time they played the Sharks, it was a rush D. And around the 18th minute, I think it was Laws just gave a tip. But it was like a rush D, and he shovels a tip to his mate who can't catch it. He gets hit, and it's a knock on. And it's like, don't go away from what you're also good at in terms of the Lions rugby, of that latch, four legs versus two. Get outside, Laws gets with the guy that's tipping, and those four legs go into that two defender, and they still win collisions and earn the right to play the tip game and the release game. And what I'm saying is find that balance of that attacking mindset. Don't just do it for the sake of read what is in front of you defensively, because also, same thing is on that rush D, there are a couple of times, one intercept try, but also they got a couple of other intercepts that didn't lead to tries. But the Sharks got those intercepts, and the Springboks will be watching that, and they'll know that defensive line speed pressure, like that rush D, will put the Lions' skill set under pressure when they're just trying to go through moves, or they're trying to, you know, utilise this attacking mindset, which I love. But it's going to be needing to find that fine balance at test match level to have that brute, let's earn the right, let's tire the defence down to then wait till the hole's open to use the tips or use the release. And I think those are the sort of areas they want to just rectify.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, that Japan game, the first Japan game when they played, Quinn Connemara was at nine, and the ability that they played on top of teams, you know, you look at the traditionally with Northern Hemisphere style of rugby, they're really good around the breakdown, being really vicious and brutal, and being able to clean men out and doing really, really well in that department. And I know they played Japan, who are a little bit different, probably physicality wise, for the South Africans. But I think that's probably if they do want to play, that's the kind of marry up of the decision making around the tips, the out the back, and actually going forward and seeing what's in front of you with what you just said, Jip. Because I think that 20-30 minute span when they played Japan in that first test match, it's probably the recipe around do want to play when they do play against the Springboks. That's the kind of how you want to see it on TV. That's how you want to look at with what that looks like and being able to score points that way.
Yeah, because if the defence isn't tired and you're giving a tip when he's on his own, you are just going to get smoked behind the gain line. Yeah.
Especially with big men, they're big men in South Africa as well.
Like, it's pointless. And then also their backfield coverage on the weekend, I know I'm being a bit hard, but I'm just pointing out areas that they'll want like the Springboks, yes, they're not playing, like Bryn said, but they'll be watching these games and going, okay, these are some areas we can exploit. But the backfield cover, before the Sharks' second try, there was a long field kick, great chase from the Sharks winger, tackles them out, and then the Sharks are in attack, and then they put a grubber in behind and they score. So just their pendulum work, like, you know, I know they are trying to rush D, but because their wingers are up all the time, it does leave quite a lot of grass in the backfield to manipulate with attacking kicks or long kicks if you get a good kick chase. So they are looking great, and I'm really enjoying the way they're playing. But I know Warren Gatland will be watching going, I don't think he would have been that happy with that. I know it was 71-26, but it was 26 all when that red card happened, which was so just unnecessary by the Sharks halfback. And it just flipped the game on its head, really.
So what do we do now? Just to go back to this COVID thing.
Yes.
What is the decision that you make, and when do you make it about, and what would the teams want about when a decision gets made about when you play a test match like this? Because it's obvious that the South African bubble is not working. So do you trust the South African bubble, and do you trust putting yourself out on the field against that bubble?
I don't know what the options are. Can they defer it and try and get it back to the UK?
Yeah, it's a short plane ride.
I don't know.
But does that change the South African bubble still being kind of infected and them having to bring more?
That's what I'm saying. Can they get healthy? Can they get everyone COVID-free, so to speak?
Yeah.
And, you know, scrap. They've had enough tour matches now, I suppose. Stormers will be a bit disappointed, but is there a way of potentially get? I don't know.
Do you have to get all the clubs involved? It would be a big beast, wouldn't it, be, to try to get that done logistically?
I'm sure it would be, but if... it'd be better than cancelling it, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I hope. I really hope it doesn't get to that, because I think, yeah.
It's well, I just can't imagine they can play at the moment, can they?
No. There's no
26
way.
Cases.
They can't.
I don't know what the rules are.
Yeah. Can they make it a bit longer? Can they?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Can they defer it and maybe take it out of South Africa?
Or cancel maybe a couple of the midweek games later on and just play some back-to-back test matches in a week? Can you do that? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, but isn't there problems with the test squad? Don't they have COVID?
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, how long does it take to get over COVID? And if you can push it out a couple of weeks, maybe there's a chance that you'd have them COVID-free by that point, and then you just play three test matches in 2.5 weeks or something and go that way, you know?
Well, they took a big squad over, so that's the case. They took a big squad.
I mean, they do it in World Cups. You play back-to-back test matches over a short period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think with how COVID is, with how COVID is, I think it's not the norm. And I think you look back probably the last 12 to 18 months in New Zealand, players that have had to adapt and certain things that aren't normal. So I just think in this scenario, it's going to be something that's foreign and almost. Because I feel both teams, both South Africa,
if they get
and
play.
The Lions, they want to play. You know, they want to play, but I can imagine both teams want to play. So, if it comes back to your point, Ross, around it's just less preparation time and they have to condense it a little bit, I think both teams would be a part of that. But I think, it's tough because it's in camp, like you said, Jip. The COVID's in camp, so it's going to take them.
I think players are pretty flexible now and pretty open to just doing what's necessary to play.
There's another piece of information that's come out in the last week or so, which has been really intriguing. Scott Robertson re-signing through till 2024, but with an out clause at 2023, which makes you obviously think about backup plans for after the next World Cup. We've obviously got Warren Gatland, who could be available after 2023 as well for the All Blacks job. It seems like New Zealand rugby is doing a pretty good job of having some serious talent in the country come the next World Cup.
I'll let Bryn talk about his dad first.
I think it's I think Rays has made it pretty clear around his ambitions and his goals around. And it was said in his press conference around he's got ambitions to have the All Black job, and so the flexibility around depending obviously with how Fozzie and that coaching group go. But I think it's great for New Zealand rugby to have not just Razor, but you talk about Gats, who has the opportunity post the World Cup to be able to be available for the All Blacks. So and I think Razor's got to talk about the success that he's had, not only the Crusaders but with whatever team he's been a part of. He's won championships, multiple championships with him. So So I think he's got a couple more years to be able to keep involving and keep growing. And but I think for us personally, as a Crusader, it's great to have him in the environment for a couple more years and been able to and have new goals and been able to keep it nice and fresh, because he does a great job at that as well. So for Christopher, the Crusaders, we're stoked for him. And then I think for New Zealand rugby as well, being able to have that flexibility with him in the country for a couple more years. But I think for him personally as well, to be able to not keep himself, you know, staying here. He's got an out clause in his contract, so no different to a player. It's smart and been able to keep his options open as well, post the World Cup as well.
It is an interesting conversation, because he's been there, done that, and people like to evolve in their career and so forth. He's got all the championships under his belt, and he's waiting. He's waiting for that chance, and we've got an All Black coach who doesn't have a contract after this season. So that had to be part of the conversation.
Oh, I'm sure it was. I think he's made no bones about it. I just think we're very fortunate that he was staying, because there would have been high demand overseas. And I think one thing I love about it, that he is staying, and it says, you know, he's going to leave no stone unturned to have a crack at that All Blacks role. And the thing I like about Scott Robinson is he does seem to keep things fresh, and he's always the innovator or doing something different or thinking outside of the box. You know, if it wasn't a COVID world, he's probably coaching the British and Irish Lions now. He's probably in that coaching team. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to just sit in a square. He's going to be always outside of that square, thinking differently. And I think that's what makes him so successful. And I think that can only be a good thing for our game here in New Zealand and where he can potentially take it.
Brent, can you give some insight into him? I suppose the thing about Scott Robertson that strikes me is he seems as much of a storyteller as he is a coach. He seems to be able to create a narrative around seasons, around games, that make things easy to understand. Could you paint a picture of how he does that, and maybe some examples from the past where he's done things like that?
Yeah, I think theming is a big part for Ray. And probably a lot of coaches now are using themes around being able to bring groups together, and Ray has a massive part around that, to be able to bring a group together for a goal, and makes it a little bit meaningful so that you can connect with that theme throughout the year. Like, won't go into details of what that looks like, but that's it's a really good thing that he does, to be able to bring a group together, especially if you think about, you know, this is our fifth year together, and we've, you know, been fortunate enough to win a lot of games through him. But you know, I think the more success you do have, it's sometimes hard to be able to re-innovate and keep the group fresh. But his ability to be able to connect back to that is a big part of why we all connect and been able to go forward and been able to play really well and winning games. And then I think he's got a really good ability as well to be able to have, for the strengths that he doesn't have, he has people to be able to do that for him. You know, I look at the likes of Scott Hansen, Brad Moore was there. You had Liam McDonald before that. You've got Andrew Goodman, who's great around detail, and then obviously, you know, he thinks outside the box as well, with the likes of Ronan O'Gara, who brought across here, Jonesy as well, and then, you know, Tarmody Allison, who's a little bit different and not originally from Canterbury. So I think he does that really, really well. So his strengths that he does have, it's been able to have the ideal picture, overall picture of what it is for us as a group. But then even for his weaknesses that he does have, he's got a really good ability of having the coaches around him that are able to help with that, and then being able to connect those coaches to his idea collectively, and then it just kind of flows on for us as players, where we're all collectively together through Razor's vision and his ability to be able to have coaches to be able to complement him really, really well.
Just before we wrap up, I'm quite excited because the Samoa Tonga game on the weekend, like, it was really tight for the most part, and Samoa ran away with it towards the end, and obviously looking forward to the second round of that and where that heads. But I think it's also exciting for Moana Pacifica, because there's a lot of players in both sides that don't have contracts overseas and don't have super contracts that are just standing out, man. Like Fumai, Slade, Matunga, you know, guys that play really well at Māori 10 Cup level, have stood up against the Māoris, as I mentioned last week, are now standing up again. Like, they're doing back-to-back performances at a high level. I don't know, from my point of view watching that, I just think it's exciting for, you know, there's been a few question marks around that team coming into Super Rugby, but I you know, tell people to watch that game and have a look at those guys, because there's some guys performing seriously well.
Oh, yeah, I follow that. Watch that game. There are going to be some guys performing really, really well, plus Ken Laban, Willie Lose, and Taylor Johnson did an amazing job with the commentary on the weekend as well. It's well worth a watch. It's going to be a really cracking game. So you've been told. You've been told. Watch that game. Bryn Hall down in Queenstown. Go eat some red meat and enjoy yourself at Botswana Butchery while swanning yourself at Millbrook Resort.
James, we'll just keep on the grind up here, mate.
That's right, on the grind. Yeah. On the grind up here, going to work, battling the traffic.
Loving it, mate.
Loving
it.
Good grind.
Yeah.
The good grind.
Living the dream.
Yeah, 100%. Talking some footy and getting into life itself. So James Parsons, loving the grind, loving the footy. And we'll catch you next week on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Make sure that you catch the international footy this weekend on Sky and Rugby Pass.